Joe presents TKO together with 32 Red.
Hello and welcome to TKO on Joe together with 32 Red. As you know, we're a podcast and YouTube show with you every Thursday. This week, we're coming to you stateside live from a fight night with Top Rank and ESPN. I'm very pleased to say the lady who is my guest this evening has spent 10 years in broadcast covering NFL basketball and is now one of the most reputable faces in the sport of boxing. It is none other than Top Rank's Christina Poncher. Such a pleasure to meet you and thank you for your time, because I know you're on air in about sort of an hour or so.
I made a specific time for you guys. I love what you guys do, and I'm happy to be here with you, Chris.
Let's talk some boxing. Obviously, the first thing we should address, because this will go out in a couple of weeks' time, but this is the fight night that Carl was supposed to headline. This is our podcast. Normally, he and I will interview a guest. Bizarre week, and boxing is never ever straightforward, is it?
It's so crazy. I mean, you can't... That's why it's like the most unpredictable sport. You couldn't write it up how it happened. You couldn't, you know, imagine something as freak as that, and we were kind of looking through some other freak injuries that have caused war, and this is right up there with the best of them. And this one has photo and video evidence to kind of show what happened. Where other ones, you just go off of hearsay, but it's so unfortunate. We were just gutted for him. Look, it was his first fight with Top Rank, his ESPN debut. I personally was looking forward to meeting him, interviewing him, and working with him, but he's got to get that hand better, and then, you know, we'll see him back. And you know, maybe it's a world title shot for him in his next fight, and he doesn't have to get that comeback fight because he already had a full training camp. So he'll do it again.
Exactly. It's hard for him to, I guess, see the positives from this situation at the moment. But I guess the one thing is that he won't have lost the progression he's got from a 12-week camp.
Right.
He just hasn't had the fight.
Right.
So fingers crossed, actually, when the hand heals up and he goes back into camp, he will still be in a kind of reasonably good place.
Right.
So we just keep our fingers crossed for him, and hopefully it is a big...
I know, and for the Irish fans here and the people that had bought tickets and flights, it's really an unfortunate situation all the way around. And the kind of guy he is, the character guy he is, you just hoping for good fortune for him. He's just one of those guys that it's hard to root against. So I wish him a speedy recovery, and I hope that we get him back here and he gets to headline another card, hopefully for a world championship.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. In the meantime, Sosa's been bumped to the main event.
Right.
He's an all-action fighter. So that should bring a few fans out tonight, regardless of the fact that Carl's off the bill, right?
Absolutely correct. I mean, and he's from Camden, New Jersey, which is a stone's throw away from here. Mm. So it's not his home, but it could be considered like his backyard. So he has some tickets on the undercard. We got a guy, Sonny Canto, who is from Philly, you know, right down the street. And he's sold a ton of tickets, Donald Smith. So there's still a Philly-heavy influence on this card. And Jason Sosa is a former world champion and, you know, is on an opportunity to hopefully make a statement in this fight and maybe get another shot at a world title in the 130-pound division. So still a good quality fight, but it's no walk in the park for him at all. I mean, it's, to me, you know, a 55-45 fight.
Mm. Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. Big year again for Top Rank. And, of course, you're at the forefront of all of that coverage. I was looking, so of the 32 weeks into the year that we are now, there have been 21 fight nights in the US alone.
That's it?
Is that, you say that's it. I mean, that's like 80% of the 80% of the week.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And as you say, you know, you're a mum now, and it's a lot of travelling. How do you find keeping a kind of reasonable work-life balance being on the road so much?
I'm still trying to figure that part out. I mean, we went from having the majority of our fights on HBO, and if we had two a month, we were ecstatic, you know, towards the last couple years. And the summer was always so slow, and, you know, things like that. You'd always have May would be stacked, September would be those months where you accept December, big fights. But now it's like, you know, a big fight every month and two or three fights. You know, I have one weekend at home, and it is challenging, but I have a great support system. It takes a village, as they say, and that's, you know, never been truer than for me being a working mom. And, you know, Top Rank and ESPN, some of those cards that have been on ESPN or ESPN Plus, like, are done, like, remotely. Like, the Conlon fight, we didn't send a whole crew over there. They called from studio and back. So sometimes those little things help. But it's a lot. But look, it's so great for the sport, and it's so great for the fighters to get opportunity to, like, actually have cards to fight on and stay busy instead of waiting for dates and then just plucking whoever's the best and everyone else doesn't get those reps and those experience.
True.
So it's a lot. And with DAZN and everybody, I mean, it's just every weekend you have your choice of what you'd like to watch, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, there's so much boxing on, and obviously for us, the hardcore fans, will get up at 4 in the morning, but we've got stuff going on in the UK as well. It's been a busy couple of years, really.
Yes.
Congratulations as well, because early this year you became the first ever female broadcaster in boxing in an English language to lead a broadcast on the play-by-play side of things. I can imagine that was an incredibly nerve-wracking few days in the build-up.
Oh, my God. And it's in my hometown.
Yeah.
And my backyard. We're like, I am literally across the street from my high school and the street that I grew up on, where I formulated my dreams of becoming a sports broadcaster. It was this incredible full circle moment. I had just one of those before in my life, where my first you know, live television broadcast was a college basketball game that I did at my alma mater where I went to college. So, I mean, these things, you couldn't write it any better. And I just feel like that's how, these are like little affirmations from God that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I never thought that these big leaps in my career and these things that I've been able to accomplish would have came after having a child.
Wow.
I waited for longer than I maybe, you know, probably more than my husband would have liked to, because I said career, and it's going to slow me down, or I'm not going to want to leave him, or people are going to look at me different because I'm a mother now, I'm not this young reporter, right? It's just, was I wrong?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, in the court of public opinion on social media, you get to see and hear exactly what people think of, and I guess it's the same for a fighter, same for a broadcaster.
Yeah, yeah.
And although we shouldn't necessarily check, we do, because we're only human.
you know how it is.
Yeah.
You look at the thing that tells not to do, but you can't
help it.
You're like, because the producers aren't going to come and give you the whole scoop.
No.
You got to just gauge the public.
Yeah.
But look, 9 years, 9.5 years of preparation to get to that point. Like, I knew I wasn't going to fail. It was just a matter of how I would handle big moments, spectacular knockout, or if there was an incident where something was unclear, you know, things that if you've never done it before, you can't really prepare. You practice on, you know, looking at fights in your living room or whatnot. So I felt confident in my preparation. And yeah, the support and the feedback was really positive. But like the one thing was on, and every time I say his name, like my heart drops, but it was the Maxim Dadashev had a knockdown, and then he came back and got a knockout on that fight. And I said something, this was on the Costa Mesa show. This was not on the show in Maryland, but I had said like with a 1-2 or something, and it was really like a 2. It was like something, a variation of a hook or a straight right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Boxing play by play is gotta be the hardest play by play to do, because you don't see things coming in terms of a punch being thrown, or if you're not sitting at the right angle, you have to wait for the replay. So that was a learning experience to me as well. So I don't see it clearly. If he hooked his right hand a little bit instead of threw it up, I need to just say, you know, down goes so-and-so. Or,
yeah, give yourself that breather to
before you see it.
A hook or an
All those things, learning experiences, instead of trying to guess or think, yeah, obviously it was a right hand, but what variation of a punch was it? Be more general and then get specific on the replay. Things like that. It's not like a guy's running down the field. You can see 50, 40, 30. You see he's running towards the end zone, or you can see if he's going to get tackled. Or basketball, the guy's on a breakaway. You can see those things. Boxing, you just don't. You just can't. It's so fast.
Let's talk about some of the boxing. The top rank this year, Jennings Rivas was the first US Fight Night of the year. Wouldn't say a huge upset for Rivas. He's a good fighter in his own right, but it was a very competitive fight and one that ended well, and obviously set up the Rivas Dylan White fight in the UK.
Well, ended well for Rivas, not for Jennings.
Exactly. Yeah.
Jennings probably thought going into that 12th round, hey, I got to get out of this round, and I'm probably going to win the fight.
Yeah,
so kudos to Rivas for what he did, and for Jennings, it has to be a wake up call. You've got to. There's got to be that extra gear, and it just seemed like watching round after round, if he could have just picked it up a little bit more. But Rivas did the right thing, saying, I got to go for broke here in that 12th round, and you know, he moves on and gets a good opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, the big upset at light heavyweight, Eleider Alvarez, beating Sergey Kovalev, who, of course, has had his ups and downs outside of the ring, we all know that, but he was still a big favorite going into that fight.
Oh, he was absolutely the favorite, and man, what a job Buddy McGirt did with Kovalev.
Crazy.
I mean, you want to talk about going back to the basics and going, getting behind your jab, throwing your combinations, moving around the outside. I mean, that Kovalev looked completely different. And it went back to the Kovalev that you saw as an amateur and what he did at that point. And I don't think Eladio was ready for that.
100%. Let's have a little look who else we had. So that night was...
Comey got hurt.
Yeah.
After that spectacular knockout that very same night, Teofimo Lopez also was on that same card too, where he fought Magdaleno.
And now, of course, those guys are lined up to fight.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I'm excited about that. Well, I think the IBF just ordered the fight, but depending on what's going on with Teofimo Lopez, I mean, he's got a lot going on with his family and in his personal life, and it's causing some troubles there. So also, I don't know how much longer he's going to make 135 pounds, but he wants the payoff. He's been at 135 his whole career, his amateur, you know, everything. So he's like, I want to get that title at 135 and then move up. But then it's like, well, what about the unification with Lomachenko after that?
Well, so tempting, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, it's like, can he make it for two more fights? Mm. So.
And the longer it goes on, presumably the longer it suits Lomachenko to know that a guy's kind of struggling and is naturally big at the weight.
100%, because Lomachenko is a natural 130 pounder, not 135. So he has no problem,
no.
You know, but he would like to collect all the belts if he could, but he, you know, no easy task for Lomachenko as well.
Well, I guess for Lomachenko's legacy, like all the great fighters, if he really, really wanted that fight and felt like he wanted to prove it, and Lopez did go up a weight, he could easily go up if he wanted to make a point and say, look, we'll do it 5 pounds heavier, do it 6 pounds heavier.
He could, but I don't know. It's
I don't know if he will.
Yeah. And who's to say it's Lopez? Because Comey is no joke.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's a great fight.
It's great.
Let's talk about Ramirez, who was so brilliant against Maurice Hooker a couple of weeks
what
ago.
A fight.
He's under the top ranked banner as well. Good fighter. And of course, we're talking Vozdik, who I think you commentated on earlier this year too.
Yep.
Defended his WBC light heavyweight title after that kind of great performance, but obviously tragic outcome against Donna Stevenson, who gladly is doing a little bit better
right.
now. And of course, the huge news, because those light heavyweight champions have been sort of in their seats for a long time, and those top four, really, we've wanted them to face each other for some time, and now, finally, we've got a unification, which is great news. And Beterbiev and Vozdik, that's some fight.
I was, like, watching Beterbiev's last fight. We had it on one of the cards in Stockton, California, and he was going against Hot Rod, and we're like, okay, if he can get past this, like, it was something that had been discussed. It was on the horizon, and the fact that it got made, with both of them being top-ranked fighters, cleared the path for that, which is why we all kind of knew that was on the horizon. And they got the deal done. It's going to happen right here, Philly, October 18th. It's just fantastic for boxing because in the era where there's all these belts and all these super champion, diamond champion, I don't know.
Franchise
Wednesday
champion.
Night champion, like whatever the case, franchise, diamond, whatever the case may be. These are the fights that get fight fans really excited and fighters too because you want to see, well, am I the best fighter at, 168, 175? Yeah, I am, but there's also three other guys that have belts, so we need to kind of settle this, and that's a good fight for that.
I mean, obviously, the franchise champion thing that's just been brought in and kind of bestowed upon Canelo is essentially a way of the WBC saying, you no longer have your mandatory commitments as a champion. Great for Canelo, because he can pick the big money fights, but for the fighters that are kind of working their way up the rankings, forming good relationships with the WBC to get in that position where they are mandatory. That title of mandatory challenger, if you've gone the WBC route, is essentially now obsolete if you want to face Canelo Alvarez.
It changes the rules, basically. Yeah. That's what you're doing. And that's what people, that's why they fight and they take these tough tests and move up to rankings and get those opportunities to where they either are guaranteed the fight or they get a nice little chunk of money to do a quote unquote step aside if there's another bigger fight to be made, but then you automatically become next. You know, that's the whole point of working your way up the rankings to get this opportunity. And I understand, you know, at this point, you know, something freak could happen and a guy could get hurt in one of these mandatory fights and it would cost him for the next. Look, we're dealing with that with Tyson Fury right now. He's going to fight a guy in Otto Wayland. It's like, well, we know the Wilder fight is on the horizon, but he's the kind of guy where he needs to stay active and stay fighting for his mental and physical, all that. Mm-hmm. And not that that's a mandatory type situation, but I'm just saying it's one of those things where it's like, you don't want to get hurt or have something happen and ruin that a mega fight. And I think that's what maybe the thinking is with Canelo. You know, if we're going to get this Triple G fight or whatever the case is going to be, is it going to be Kovalev or whatever, like,
you know, minimize your risk on the way to that fight.
That's it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about women in boxing. The females have blazed the trail. Katie Taylor, Clarissa Shields.
Yeah.
There are a number of girls on top rank too. But this has really been a movement that kind of started, it seems, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But 2012, the Olympic Games in London produced three or four top quality Olympians that turned professional. Clarissa Shields, of course, the first American female to win two back-to-back gold medals. First American boxer, full stop. I guess for you, you're leading the way for females in broadcasting boxing, which is again a new thing, and the Woolhouse is doing the same back in the UK. Is it exciting to be part of a new movement of women leading the way in a sport that has for so long kind of pushed them onto the sidelines?
Yeah, it's very exciting, and I'm very honored to be considered, you know, one of those in the forefront. And I look back and, you know, in watching boxing in my day, and really the only woman that I looked at as far as a broadcast perspective was Claudia Trejos, and she did a lot of stuff in Spanish and stuff in English too, and she's kind of the only person that I had, but she was also doing other sports and things like that. I wouldn't really say that she was the female face of boxing at that time, because there wasn't, there really wasn't one. And even female boxing, it's like, oh, you have Mia St. John, but then she's on Playboy and you're like, oh, that's not what I want. Then you get a Christy Martin, and you know, and her story, and that's a whole nother thing, the coal miner's daughter. But there were flashes of people, but now it's like there is a whole wave of these women, yes, and that they're good fighters, and they're like, let's fight 3-minute rounds. Let's fight for, you know what I mean? Things where like those women want more equality. You got Michaela Mayer, you know, pushing that bar as another Olympian and things like that too. So it feels great on the broadcast side to kind of help move the needle in that sense. And I feel a great responsibility in that role because I know that there are now, because of the amount of female fighters are, there are now young girls that are boxing that are looking up to them, and that means they're watching the broadcast as well. Exactly. And maybe if they don't become a fighter, they say, I can do blow by blow. Mm. I can be a commentator. I can interview these fighters. And I take great pride in that and preparing myself well. And I feel like if this opportunity maybe had come 5 years ago, I wouldn't understand the weight and the responsibility the way that I do now, having 10 years of experience behind me.
Because the original dream for you was to be courtside reporter for the, was it the Lakers?
Yes, yeah. You really did your homework, Chris.
Always,
you
know, always do my homework.
Yeah. That was always a dream growing up in Southern California. Basketball is my first love. I played it my whole life. And you know, I never would have thought becoming a boxing commentator, that was not even in the realm of possibility, because there was no
blueprint for you, which is, again, and I guess you're asking the bosses to take a kind of a risk in that sense, because they're the ones that are creating the first blueprint for this.
Funny enough, I think I felt a little less pressure in that sense because they asked me to do it. I started doing the reporting and stuff, which is where I felt comfortable. But once they kind of put me on the commentary team and said, hey, you know, she can add a little bit more insight than just the 30 seconds or the minute, you know, reports. Let's keep her mic open. And then why don't we bring her to the table? And then it was years of doing that alongside the Colonel Bob Sheridan and, you know, Bruce Beck and these guys honing my skills with Rich Murata and Al Bernstein. And that was the school that I learned from. I'm sitting next to them. And then it was before the blow-by-blow, it was ESPN top-ranked Brad Jacobs that's like, why don't we give Christina a shot? We've tried these different guys. It's hard to get guys to commit because they work other sports or whatnot, at least for the undercards. She's the one that's there every week. She's the one that knows these fighters. She's there all fight week. She goes to camp. Why don't we give her a shot? So when they approached me, I was like, okay, it took a little pressure off, because it wasn't like, I do play-by-play? Hey, can I do play-by-play? They, you know, so that made it feel, that made me feel good that they are taking that chance or giving me that opportunity because they saw that I had the potential to be able to do it. And that, I think, gave me a little boost of confidence.
Because there's a big difference between knowing the stories and understanding the fighters and what it means to them, and actually being able to read a fight and understand the technical side of the game.
100%.
But as somebody that, see, when I very first heard you, I said to you, I switched on the stream. My ear almost didn't connect to my brain because there'd never been a female lead commentator. I didn't realize it was you. And my first thought was, wow, she's really good and she really knows what she's looking at. So my instant assumption was that you had been a fighter. Of course, you haven't been. So tell me about who have been your biggest influences, who has taught you the most about the technical side, who have you learned from? I know you've done some work with Timothy Bradley, but who else?
Probably first and foremost was working with the Colonel, Bob Sheridan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, for those of you that have been watching boxing for years and years,
Ali and
Foreman. I mean, and he was like, he could be a one-man broadcast crew. He does it all. He talks the whole, he could talk the whole
he's
time.
So great,
he doesn't
isn't
need he? He's also a judge and a rep. He's got, he can do it all. And sitting next to him for all these years on the undercards and just learning from him and learning the rules and learning tendencies and learning things. See how he switched orthodox, or see how he switched southpaw and he got hit a little bit more there. See the footwork, if he doesn't sit down on his punches, or see when you have a southpaw and orthodox fighter, the position of the front foot, and just every little technical aspect. I felt like I was just, sometimes I caught myself just not talking to him because I'm listening and learning as well.
You've got to be present to learn.
Yes. So he by far was the biggest influence in that sense. And then later on, working along with guys like Timmy, working along now with guys like Andre, who when I sit next to them and, you know, they're breaking down film and I'm trying to see what they see. Because, look, I always said I'm a color commentator, or now I'm a player. I could analyze what I see, but I always feel like that analyst seat is best suited for a coach or a trainer.
That's
or
tradition,
an athlete.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, because I need somebody that I could refer to and say, what would you do in this situation? Mm. What did you do? Or as a coach, what would you tell your fighter? I can analyze, say, oh, he should have did this, but I don't have that, you know, experience as far as being in the ring or doing it. So I feel like sitting alongside those guys, even just watching tape with them, is where I've learned a lot.
And I think that's the key, isn't it? So many fighters know exactly what they're doing, but it's another skill being able to articulate it to an audience. I mean, Andre Ward is someone I've personally learned a huge amount from, because not only does he understand the real kind of top level intricacies of a very complicated sport, but he's able to actually make them an understandable kind of digestible bit of information for maybe a casual fan.
Deliver it in an articulate way.
Yeah.
You know, because as you know, calling fights, you gotta, it's about, you know, you want to be as concise as possible with the message that you're trying to deliver, but, you know, still make it sound thorough and make even the casual fan understand what you're saying. Some guys are super technical when they call fights. It's like, somebody's not gonna understand what you meant by that. You gotta kind of explain it in I don't wanna say in layman's terms, but something that is a little bit more, you know, broad so people understand. And I tried to take a little bit of everyone, the storytelling of Larry Merchant, things that he would pick up just from sitting in the lobby of the hotel. Yeah. The way Max can articulate a point and get in and get out. Jim Lamp, all these guys. I mean, I was side by side with these HBO guys for a long time, and it was the best. There was no school for this, but I feel like I got the best education sitting alongside them.
Because what's interesting in the UK is normally you have a lead commentator, you have one analyst. But in America, often you have three, sometimes even four guys. Yeah. And I think the beauty of having three or four is that if they all have a very specific role, they have longer in between making those points, but they have more time to think about what they're gonna say. So as you say, when Max Kellerman does chip in, you know what he's about to say. It's kind of, Max is speaking, we need to listen.
And because it's
this
poignant.
Is gonna be it's always relevant. Yep. And it always makes you see the fight in a slightly different way. Whereas if he has to speak every 10, 15 seconds, maybe he doesn't have the time to breathe and actually think about what he's seeing and summarize. So
100%.
Yeah, it's a different way you guys do things. I mean, I personally like it, but maybe we've just, you know, we're English, we like our traditions and we're stuck in that way.
Sure, so. And there's no right or wrong. Everyone has a preference, right? And some people say, oh, it's too many people on the broadcast team, or, you know, two sounds better. And like, no, it's nice having that third opinion. So it's really all a matter of preference. And it's, I think a lot of people sitting at home feel like they could sit in that chair and do a better job until light goes on to the headset and it's like, oh shoot, it's
good,
not the same. Like,
that, yeah.
It's just, it's really not as easy as people. They have the benefit of replay, like, oh my God, that was not that much. And you got to call it in a split second. And as you know, it's quite challenging, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
No, me neither. Out of interest, of the three sports you were kind of working in, NFL, basketball, what was it that eventually kind of drew you to boxing? I get the impression it kind of stole your heart a little bit. Is that right?
That's exactly. I use those words. It just grabbed me by the heartstrings, really. It did. And it was the first individual sport I've covered. I've always covered team sports. So the dynamic of mano a mano, one athlete, all the pressure. Yes, you have a team, but it's up to one individual to perform at their peak each and every time. If you have an off night and you're a quarterback, running back, you have a whole team that can get behind you and, you know, pick up, you know, then you run the ball more, or then you pass, and if your run game is struggling, whatever. And it's like, you have an off night and you're going to lose. There's not much else you have to depend on. And the fact that these fighters literally put their life on the line every time they fight, it's not a joke. It's not a game. And from what we saw 2 weeks ago, that was never been more poignant. I've never experienced something like that, or called a fight where that was the result. And as much as it would turn a lot of people away from the sport, I know that the fighters understand the responsibility, and I think us as broadcasters and everybody involved, you have to really appreciate and respect what these athletes do and what they put on the line. And I think that how much is on the line each and every time is something that attracted me to the sport as well.
It's interesting because Carl and I have spoken about this on a previous podcast, and I said, how do you manage to get in the ring when you've got a wife and kids, knowing the risks? And I think he said something along the lines of, well, you don't think about the risks, because if you did, you wouldn't be able to do what you do. So there's an element of, yeah, we understand what we're getting ourselves into, but part of being a fighter is that you have that part of your brain that, you know, stops the rest of us from like jumping off the cliff, from doing all those things that are inherently, you know, kind of pull us away from what our urges are to keep ourselves safe. They almost don't have that switch. And so they're able to do things that, you know, ordinary people just can't do.
That's why they're crazy. No,
yeah.
No, I mean, like, there's this switch, right?
There
where they
is,
have
yeah.
to be able to block that out. And I don't remember who said it. I read it in an article, but it was like, we know what we sign up for, or we know what's at risk, but and we accept that, but not all our family and our kids know. They don't necessarily accept it, your kids especially, they don't know what all is at stake and what all is at risk. And it's just, you know, that's why anytime you get in, these fighters get in the ring, it's, oh, he's fighting a bomb, or he's fighting, okay, well, that bomb's getting ready to risk his life for your entertainment and to provide for his family. This is his job.
While you're on the couch, yeah.
What did you do today?
Yeah, yeah, at the very least, I think respect across the board would be nice, wouldn't it? So coming up is Lomachenko defending his belt against Luke Campbell in London. Are you going to make the trip, or are you not sure yet?
I'm hoping. I'm not sure yet. Things are still kind of up in the air as far as, like, who Top Rank and ESPN is sending over there, which sounds crazy because we're like 2 weeks away, but that's how boxing is. Sometimes things just happen last minute, but I would love to. I've never covered a fight in the UK before. I've gone there with the NFL in London and covered a game there, and that was a crazy atmosphere. so different than NFL games in the States. You see, like, you know, you go to an NFL game in the States and the two teams playing, those are the two teams' jerseys that you see people wearing. But no, an NFL game in London, it's like every team, whatever jersey you have, everyone's wearing you know, whatever it is. It was like, you know, I felt like everyone was cheering for both teams. It was insane. It was a lot of fun. So I hope I do go, but I'm sure we're going to have many more now that, you know, they've top rank and, you know, Matchroom and DAZN have shown that they can make fights. You mentioned the Hooker Ramirez fight, things like that. So I'm looking for much more of that to come in the future. So if not this one, then hopefully another one.
No, well, it'd be great to have you over and see what you think of the English fans and the way we do things there. And like you say, it's nice because in a sport where there's so many promotional divides, Eddie and Bob, they have this kind of tongue-in-cheek rivalry. But I think there's a lot of respect from Eddie to Bob because he's his elder and he knew his dad well. And I think hopefully they'll collaborate because it will lead ultimately to the biggest and best fights. And that, I think, is what we all want, isn't it?
That's it. That's what's going to keep the sport alive and thriving, and we're seeing some of that. It's all this other, you know, other side of the street stuff. But if you watch that Ramirez Hooker broadcast, you saw Chris Mannix interviewing Terrence Crawford.
You know,
you saw Bob and Eddie sit down for a conversation, you know, or Chris interviewing Bob for DAZN, and that even happened before when they sent Hooker over to fight Alex Salcedo, and you know, so there's things happening, and I hope that we continue in that direction because we can't let these big mega fights go by the wayside because of politics and money. Because if these are the fights can get made, that's what's going to bring even more money into the sport and more glory into the sport. It's not that the you know, the egos and everything keeping things separate.
No, I completely agreed. Well, the time is 8 o'clock and we agreed to get you back to your job
before
8 o'clock because the music's kicked in just in time.
Somebody's making a ring walk here in a second.
Yeah, they are. So I'll let you get back to it. But listen, it's been such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. And I hope if I make the trip across the pond the next time, you know, we can do this again.
100%. That would be absolutely
And likewise.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
And thank you home for watching. My thanks to Christina Poncher. Another episode of TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red, Done and Dusted. We will catch you at the same time, as always, next week. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red.